We're in Hebrews 11, verse 32. It's a verse that names many Old Testament saints that have shown faith towards the Lord. And I want that to be a hallmark of my life, that I showed faith towards the Lord. Last week, we looked at David, who is the warrior, how he slew Goliath and so forth. And you have to be sort of in awe of David for his courage and his faith. David, he went to King Saul and informs rather Saul that he will fight Goliath. I will go and fight this giant if you will allow it, Saul. And he tells Saul, God has delivered me from lions and bears, from their destructive powers. And these are two ferocious beasts that kill men and kill sheep. And God has delivered David from them. And he's got a question. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And it's almost like David says, I don't care if he's a giant. And after some resistance from King Saul, David is permitted to go and fight Goliath. And Goliath, now he has made cowards of the armies of Israel and of King Saul, and he would taunt them in their battle array morning and evening. And he would cry out, send me a man that we may fight together and declare who is champion and who will serve who. King Saul is backed into a corner. And so Saul finally agrees, okay, David, go fight Goliath. Now on the surface, Israel and King Saul are afraid for David. They don't think David is a match for Saul. David's brother, Eliab, is angry with David. He tells David, you're a proud and insolent young man. Go back to the sheep and don't worry about these warrior things. But David, he will not be persuaded not to fight. David knows his cause is right and his motive is right before God. David has faith in God and is ready to fight Goliath, and he is ready to perhaps die if necessary in battle. And we read how God has been preparing David all of his life in this battle. He's being prepared for Goliath. God has sent Samuel the prophet to Jesse's household, David's father, to anoint David as the future king. And when we examine this situation from God's side of the picture, David cannot fail. Or God isn't God. And David, he does defeat Goliath, and he takes Goliath's own sword and cuts off his head. And then Israel enjoys a great victory by the hands of a young shepherd that God has prepared. David is a man that God speaks of and says, he's after my own heart. What a great thing to have said of a person. But David, he was a man of passion. And David would have times of dreadful sins and failures before the Lord. And we'll look at some of those failures, but I want to kind of reverse things, and I want to close with David as a youth. But as David grew older, we read some of his failures, and God is angry with David, their king of Israel, once he's an old man, for David has been tempted to number Israel and to number Judah. David wants to take a census. So in 2 Samuel 24, 1 through 9, you may want to turn there. We'll be in 2 Samuel chapter 24. As we read, "And the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, 'Go number Israel and Judah.' So the king said to Joab, the commander of the army who was with him, 'Now go throughout all the tribes of Israel from Dan to Beersheba and count the people that I may know the number of the people.' And Joab said to the king, 'Now may the Lord your God add to you people 100 times more than they are, and may the eyes of the Lord, the king, see it. But why does my Lord the king desire this thing?'" And that's a good question. "Nevertheless, the king's word prevails against Joab and against the captains of the army. Therefore, Joab and the captains of the army went out from the presence of the king to count the people of Israel. And they crossed over the Jordan, camped in Aurora, and on the right side of the town, which is in the midst of the ravine of Gad, toward Jezer. There they came to Gilead, and in the land of Tanim, Hoshi, and Dan-Jaan, and around to Sidon. And they came to the stronghold of Tyre, to all the cities of the Hivites and the Canaanites. Then they went out to South Judah as far as Beersheba. So when they had gone through all the land, they came to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days." Notice the precise number of days. "Then Joab gave the sum of the number of the people to the king. And there was in Israel 800,000 valiant men who drew the sword, and the men of Judah was 500,000. That's quite a few for any army. David tells Joab, "Go throughout all the land. Go through Israel, go through Judah, and give me the number of men that will be ready to fight for our cause." Joab doesn't want to do this. He knows that this census is a bad idea. But the word of the king, King David, his word prevails. And Joab, he must obey the king, and he brings back the numbers. 800,000 men in Israel, 500,000 men in Judah, all valiant warriors. This numbering of Israel and Judah has an evil motive. Joab, he tries to persuade David, "Don't count the people, trust God. Don't be putting all your hope and trust into numbers and into all these different things." And David will not listen. In verse 10 of 2 Samuel 24, "And David's heart condemned him after he numbered the people. So David said to the Lord, 'I have sinned greatly in what I have done, but now I pray, O Lord, take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have done very foolishly.'" David admits, "I have sinned greatly. Please, Lord, take away my iniquity, for I have been very foolish." David repents. But God tells David, there is a consequence to sin. Sin has a consequence. It has a wage that must be paid. We can receive forgiveness, but there's still the consequence and the wages of sin. My beloved dear old mother, she used to say to us, "Payday is not always on Friday." We knew what she meant. Gad the prophet tells David his punishment. "Choose, David. God offers you three options here, David, and you have to choose which one you want. There can be 7 years of famine upon the land, drought and famine, or there can be 3 months where you flee before your enemies, run from those who want to kill you, or you can enter into a three-day plague, a death plague, that comes from God. Which do you choose, David? What should I tell God about your answer? Now, David, he has to choose his punishment. He's been forgiven, but now the consequence. David chooses the plague that will come from God. The plague comes and 70,000 men die in Israel. But God says, enough, and he stops the angel of death from his destruction. God stops it when he saw that that was enough. That's sufficient. David now understands the penalty of his sin. Verse 17, David says, surely I have sinned and I have done wickedly, but these sheep, speaking of the people, what have they done, Lord? They're innocent. I'm the guilty one. David says, let your hand be against me, God, not against the people. And let me and my father's house bear the guilt of our sin. And that's sort of noble of David. But David does not want the people that he is king over to suffer for his sins. And we see sin has consequence. It has consequence upon people around us. It can have consequences upon our children and our family. David, wanting to offer sacrifices to the Lord, he buys Araunah's threshing floor. And David, in his own way, has to pay for the sacrifice. He won't let Araunah give him that threshing floor. He buys it with his own money. And the Lord hears David's prayer, and he sees the sacrifice, and the plague is withdrawn. David was wise to choose the hand of the Lord as the option to come upon him, knowing that God is full of grace and God is full of mercy. Have you ever had God deal with you? He deals with us when we fail or when we sin in the kindest way that he can. He wants to make it known to us that we have sinned, but he does it in a kind way. And after this census, we have David. Then David, a few years later, he moves into the adulterous affair with Bathsheba and the killing of Uriah, her husband. And in 2 Samuel 11, David does not go out to war when the time of war was there to present itself and it was expected of the kings. But David sends out Joab, his general, and he sends out other valiant warriors to fight Ammon. But David stays home. And from the roof of his house, David sees Bathsheba bathing, and she is very beautiful to behold. Now, there wouldn't be any temptation here if Bathsheba was an ugly duckling. She's not. She's very beautiful. And David sees her, and he lusts for her, and he goes and he takes Bathsheba to himself. The affair's over. No harm. The king is just being king. He has done as the king pleases. But Bathsheba sends word to David, I am with child. Now David will go through the process of attempting to hide his sin. He calls for Uriah, her husband. Come home from the battle. David goes through the motions of concern about the war with Ammon. He sends Uriah home to be with his wife Bathsheba, and thinking this will cover everything. But Uriah refuses to take the comforts of home when all his fellow soldiers are fighting. They're in battle, and Uriah will not take the pleasure of going to his home. So David calls Uriah again. This time he gets Uriah drunk, and he sends him home one more time. But Uriah remains faithful as a soldier to his position, and he does not go into his wife. So now David is left with no other choice but to kill Uriah. He has other choices, but in his mind, he will simply do away with Uriah. And he sends word by Uriah to Joab, the general. And it's put Uriah in the hottest point of battle, then withdraw from him. In other words, let Ammon do the dirty work that David wants done, and that is to kill Uriah. Joab obeys David's command, and Uriah dies. All is covered up. Everything looks like it turned out just like David wanted. But then Nathan, he comes to David and he tells David a story. And that's in 2 Samuel chapter 12, 1 through 15. We'll read that. Then the Lord sent Nathan to David, and he came to him and he said to him, "There were two men in one city, one rich and one poor. The rich man had exceedingly many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and nourished, and it grew up together with him and his children. It ate of his own food and drank from his own cup and lay in the bosom, and it was like a daughter to him. And a traveler came to the rich man, who refused to take from his own flock and from his own herd to prepare one for the wayfaring man who had come to him. But he took the poor man's lamb, prepared it for the man who had come to him." So David's anger was greatly aroused against the man, and he said to Nathan, "As the Lord lives, this man who has done this shall surely die. And he shall restore fourfold for the lamb, because he did this thing, and because he had no pity." Then Nathan said to David, "You are the man. Thus the Lord God of Israel, I anointed you king over Israel, and now I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave you your master's house and your master's wives into your keeping, and gave you the house of Israel and Judah. And if it had been too little, I also would have given you much more. Why have you despised the commandment of the Lord to do this evil in his sight? You have killed Uriah the Hittite with the sword, and yet taken his wife to be your wife, and have killed him with the sword of the people of Ammon. Now therefore, the sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. Thus says the Lord, behold, I will raise up adversaries against you from your own house. I will take your wives before your eyes and give them to your neighbors, and he shall lie with your wives in the sight of their son, of this son. For you did it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel, before the sun." So David said to Nathan, "I have sinned against the Lord." And Nathan said to David, "The Lord also has put away your sin. You shall not die. However, because of this deed you have given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme the child, because of the child who also is born, and the child shall surely die." Then Nathan departed to his house, and the Lord struck the child, and Uriah's wife bore to David, and it became ill and died. Nathan the prophet How would you like to be the prophet and have to go to the king and tell him he sinned? But Nathan, the prophet, openly declares to David, you are the wicked rich man in this story. David answers Nathan and the Lord, I have sinned against the Lord. Okay. I want to say, yeah, David, you sinned against the Lord, but you sinned against Bathsheba and Uriah also. But David's primary sin has been against the Lord. For all sin is first and foremost against God. And sometimes we miss that. Now, without delay, Nathan tells David, the Lord has put away your sin, but not the consequence of your sin. David, you will live to see in your own home, in your own family, and you will suffer for this sin. David's wives will be given over to other men. The child of Bathsheba, he will die. And the enemies of the Lord will now blaspheme against God because of your sin, David. But David, your life is spared. Now, why does Nathan say your life is spared? Because there was no sacrifice for capital murder. If you committed murder, there was no sacrifice you could offer God for repentance or forgiveness. There's no law that allows you to be free, David. So Nathan informs David right away, no delay, God has put away your sin. But he must bear the reproach now, David does. He must bear the shame of his sin. Now remember David, the great psalmist. He is a man after God's own heart. And this reproach that he brought upon God's name brings David great sorrow. So, when we consider David, we can be, if not thinking properly, we can be very judgmental against David. And that's why I want to end with David as a young man. I want to conclude with David running from Saul in what I call the glory days of David. David was on the run from Saul. Saul wants to kill David, and he seeks David to kill him because things have broke down between Saul and David, and Saul is jealous of David. David, along with the help of Jonathan, Saul's son, he flees Saul, knowing Saul is out to kill him. David will go on the run for several years because of King Saul's desire to murder him. And it all began when David slew Goliath. And the people, the women, sang songs, danced, and made great declarations about David. And they would sing and say, Saul has killed his thousands, and David has killed his 10,000s. And from that day forward, Saul is envious of David. Verse 29 of chapter 18, Saul becomes afraid of David. He's afraid of David's popularity, and he becomes his enemy continually. David is on the run. He's fleeing Saul. He's out in the wilderness, and he comes to a cave at Adullam. 400 men have joined David, and they've gathered to David, outcasts like David. But Saul is on a rampage, and through Doeg, really an evil man, he will kill 85 men of the priesthood in his anger. And he kills them because Saul thinks David has been helped by these priests. Chapter 24, David flees, goes to En-Gedi, a wild, deserted area, and he's hiding in a cave, and Saul is seeking after him, and David goes into the recesses of this cave, and Saul comes in the very same cave to use the bathroom. Same cave. David arises and he secretly cuts off a corner of Saul's robe, but he does Saul no harm. Nor will David allow those soldiers there with him to harm Saul. And I think this is the height of David's humility before God. But let's read about this. And that's in 1 Samuel 24:6. And he said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord." So David will not raise his hand against King Saul. He will not fight against God's anointed, even though Saul is trying to kill him. Listen to David as he cries out to Saul after he goes out of the cave. And David cries out to Saul and says, "Why do you listen to the words of men who say, 'Indeed, David seeks to harm you'? Look, this day your eyes have seen that the Lord delivered you today into my hand in the cave. And someone urged me to kill you, but my eyes spared you. And I said, 'I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed.' Moreover, my father, see, yes, see, the corner of your robe in my hand. For in that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you, know and see that there is neither evil nor rebellion in my hand, and I have not sinned against you, yet you hunt to take my life. Let the Lord judge between you and me, and let the Lord avenge me on you, but my hand shall not be against you." David takes what we call the high road. David and all his failures and all his sins still refuse to raise his hand against King Saul, God's anointed. And in this, we begin to see David as a young man. He is a man after God's own heart. David had the capacity to sin grievously. But you know, I've noticed that I have the capacity to sin grievously. Under the right pressures, under the right circumstance, I can be guilty of any and all sins. It's just a matter of the pressure that I'm in at the moment. But David, in his younger years, was a man of integrity and honor. And he will not harm King Saul, who sought to kill him. David, a man of honor and restraint before God. No wonder God says of David, "He's a man after my own heart." So time goes by, and we come down to the day of Jesus, and they hail Jesus as the son of David. A great honor for David to be called the Messiah who would deliver, and Jesus being called the son of David. And this greatly blessed David in his latter years. Excuse me. When David says, "Who am I that you would put the Christ, the Messiah, in my lineage, in my heritage?" And David is amazed that Christ would come through his bloodlines. So what's their message? Have the heart of David. Have the integrity of David and the humility of David. David, Israel's greatest king, would not harm Saul, who wanted to kill him. What a wonderful testimony of David. Let me get you to stand and we'll close in prayer.